What are specialty drugs? Has price pressure in the US bottomed out? Are Indian companies innovating fast enough? What are biosimilars? Are we really over US FDA issues? Will pharma stocks ever show supernormal returns? These are some of the questions the Meds in Box podcast on CNBCTV18.com aims to answer. Hi, I'm Ekta Batra. Do tune in while I chat with the top voices in the pharma and healthcare space to get answers to the most challenging questions, spot the key trends, and identify the next leg of growth in the pharma and healthcare space. Only on CNBC TV 18.
Hello and welcome to the Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to give you an insight on all things pharma and health, from discussing trends in industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. Our guest on today's podcast is Shailesh Bhan. He's the Deputy CIO Equity Investments at Reliance Mutual Fund. Shailesh currently manages over 22,000 crores of equity assets across various funds, which includes the Reliance Pharma Fund. And for today, we're going to ask Shailesh to put on his pharma hat and discuss his thoughts on the industry with us. Shailesh, hi. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, let's start with returns in the pharma space itself. If you look at it over in the past five odd years, it's been a good amount of returns that the pharmaceutical stocks have seen, that too if you pick the right stocks. In the past 1 year, there's been a good amount of recovery that we've seen if you compare it to what we've seen in the past 3 years. So when do we get back to those super normal returns in the pharmaceutical space, and have we probably turned in the cycle now?
The sector, like you know, has seen three, four very difficult years. You know, we have talked about the challenges this sector has faced in the last 3, 4 years. And most of the challenges which have been there are now at least 70-80% of those challenges are getting behind. So I think the sector will now come back to normal growth, and normal earnings recovery should be visible in a lot of very good quality businesses in this industry. And that should support sector returns over a period of time. Will the super normal returns of the past recur? I think they only happen in an exceptional bull cycle, which I think is not the case today. We are looking at normal recovery in the pharma space and looking at earnings driven performances by the pharma sector over the next 1 to 3 years.
Where do you think we are when it comes to the earnings cycle?
In the pharma space, the earnings cycle improvement has started to happen. For many reasons, the first coming from a fact that their high base of US profits are getting behind, so the US business is stabilizing. Second, you are seeing the fact that domestic business contribution is rising in most of their cases in the share of profits, and the emerging market business or the non-US export business is starting to recover. I think with the tailwinds of currency, we are actually in a year of earnings recovery for the sector, and I think the trend should start improving from here on.
What are you factoring in, say, from the US markets, given the price pressure and maybe a little bit of stabilization that we're seeing there?
The US market stabilization is clearly visible. Very sharp erosion in prices, which were a norm till about over the last 2 years, they have now come back to normal price erosions, which are in the range of 5-7% in older products. And I think we have seen the peak of price erosion over the last 2 years. So we are now seeing stabilization. And as product approvals have started to come for Indian companies, the US business should start reporting revenue growth as well as profit growth. A lot of Indian companies will also redesign their organization to reflect the real requirements of current business reality. And I think that will also reduce cost materially, cut R&D expenditure, and support the earnings from the US market.
In that sense, Shailesh, are you happy that some companies are pruning their investments in the US? They're becoming more focused in terms of R&D. They're probably stopping the pursuit of certain molecules because there's high amount of competitive intensity that they see in that. Are you seeing that as a positive, despite the fact that they might be taking write-offs on those assets which they're discontinuing or pruning?
See, 3 years back or 4 years back, with the visibility with companies had of the generics market, the amount of investment they have done in a lot of products, you know, which are now coming for approval, some of those products are not very worthy in terms of what they will yield for these companies in today's environment. So I think those products, these write-offs have been taken when they have made investment. So there are no pending write-offs in a lot of these company cases. So these write-offs are actually already there in the profit and loss account for a lot of good quality businesses who are charging them to their P&L. I think what is critical is to realign R&D, you know, not to prune or reduce, but to realign towards specifically a far greater productivity out of your R&D spend. It is possible because in the good old days, you know, people wanted to grow everywhere and, you know, they are spending money on many areas. Now there'll be a focus spend on specific categories, say like specialty in US, or say like very specific, hopefully low competition, generic products which require a little bit more technological challenges or more clinical trials and all that to be launched. So I think the quality of R&D spend will be way different from here on till the next 3 years versus what has been there in the past. So I think quality of spend will change, and overall cost when I'm looking at realignment is taking away or weaning out unproductive R&D, and second also the overall cost structure itself. Companies are running with 10 plants, 15 plants, companies are running with subscale or an infrastructure which is underutilized by a massive margin. Outsourcing is low because growth was so strong that they had to deliver well then. So I think a lot of these redesign of the organizations are also underway.
But the point is that a lot of these complex and specialty pipelines probably see the peak of sales from 3 to 5 years. And then that point in time, you'll probably have another drug which will come under the 505B2 route, or, you know, which will probably have higher efficacy in a different form. And then the prospects of that particular drug will probably dwindle also. That risk always remains. But in order to bank on a specialty or a complex pipeline to see its final fruition, you at least have to stay in the stock for 3 to 5 years from the time the specialty pipeline hits the market. Is that correct?
Yeah, the specialty business nature is exactly what you defined. You know, you need a portfolio. You definitely have competitive risk coming after 3-4 years, and it takes some time to build the revenues also in these categories. So it's a very different business than the US generic business we are used to. And this business also requires a lot of capital investment and a lot of investment for a sustained period of time. So is the nature of the business in that context change? Yes. But is this a market which can be lucratively be approached or, you know, worked on by Indian companies? It can. And I think some companies have been trying to touch this market for the last 5-10 years. I think now the aggression will be much higher. And with a lot of focus there, a few successes will happen. What is important to note is here also you need to build a portfolio. You know, it cannot be dependent on one or two products or three products. You need to build a portfolio, which does require upscale in R&D and all that. It takes a little bit of time. But I think you need to invest there. And I think that is what a lot of companies are now talking about, either buying out assets on their balance sheet and launching them in the markets, or trying to build them on their own if they have already deep-rooted capabilities there.
But Shailesh, where do you think we are when it comes to research and development for Indian companies? Do you think that the US and Europe is way too far ahead as compared to us for us to even catch up in a material way? The reason I ask is that, you know, there's a latest drug which has come out in the cancer space, I think, which is FDA approved, which targets cancer on a molecular level. So the kind of spearhead that we've seen in R&D is much more than where Indian companies are. So will we ever get there, according to you?
Yeah. See, when we are referring to R&D, it is very different from what basic research which is happening for new product introductions in the US. We are just referring to R&D from a point of view that, you know, how can you improve efficiency of already existing products? Or how can you enhance the marketability or do research on existing products where safety is proven, but for more indications? Or how we can change the dosage levels, like from efficiency and from a delivery point of view? I think that is what R&D is, where India is working on today and reaching. Our scale of investments of each company spending 2,000 crore, 1,500 crore rupees on R&D, I think can take you only to this level. And, you know, there'll always a step, you know, a kind of a step-by-step approach which can happen. Doing basic research and doing at the scale where US companies are doing, I think those risk profile or the ability to take those risks doesn't exist in current balance sheets of Indian pharma companies. Do they have capabilities? You know, capabilities only come in R&D when you start doing it. So it's like a chicken and egg. So you have to invest to learn and grow, because if somebody else was already doing it, it's, you know, he would have obviously reached a level of market launch. So I think we are not there, right? Do we have the capabilities to do that? We are building it. It takes a lot of time. And the biggest question is, do we have the capital and the risk appetite to do the kind of R&D which happens in the US, which is, I think at the moment we don't have it. Maybe in 5-7 years later, when we become much larger or the specialty investments prove profitable, the next level of investments in basic research can actually happen. But I think we are far away from that. Today we are trying to get do research which will enable a little bit more longevity of business than pure generics, plus also provide us to enhance our skills in many areas, you know. So I think it's a one step journey. So we are not looking at basic research today as a major opportunity for Indian pharma, at least for the next 5 years.
What kind of investments do we need to get there in terms of R&D? Do you think that maybe investments in terms of workforce would probably be critical, education, as well as maybe a cultural sort of change or outlook within the Indian market?
See, the scale of investments itself is large, and the capabilities to build, you know, it's like building a R&D capability in the molecular side of it, or building it in very specialized areas. You know, you need to keep doing it for 5-10 years to reach there. You know, it's about knowledge being accumulated and, you know, being in some sense absorbed by the whole company, right, to be able to deliver end results. So it's a journey which is there. You need investments, one, capital itself. You need to insource capability, because if it is available internationally, there are a lot of good quality small R&D setups globally which are well funded, which are all, a lot of them are listed globally, and you could actually insource technologies from them or possibly take capabilities from them. So this is the second thing needed. The other area is the longevity of these investments. Normally what happens is people give up after 3-5 years because the balance sheets don't bear. So the most important thing is capital and then capability building. I think it's a combination of those. In my judgment, you need to invest way ahead of time, take the risk ahead, and, you know, try to do it without return expectations from a 3-5 year point of view, which I think a lot of balance sheets in India cannot have, because our sizes in the context of global basic research companies is very, very small.
Okay. Do you think that at least in the near term, then maybe geographical diversification would be a way to achieve growth? We've spoken about the Indian market at length, that, you know, that's an opportunity. But what about a market such as China and maybe diversifying there, or Japan, in order to see what exactly the growth prospects might be? China more so because of the fallout of what might happen with regards to the trade war.
See, the US business, the US generic business by Indian companies was primarily built on the cash flows of India business, which were, you know, very strong and, you know, allowed for investments in the balance sheets of a lot of these pharma businesses. I think similarly, you know, if you are able to make a breakthrough in a market like China, which is very large, or get some successes in several other markets which you've talked about, the kind of cash flow generation which can happen for Indian companies can support the next level of investments. So initially you need to create a pool which throws you cash or generates cash, which can be pumped into 3-5 years of without results driven R&D from a 3-5 year period, and then it will get into a next level of scale up. So you're right that you have to tap these markets which are very large. China is a phenomenal market. If you're able to get it right, you can have businesses doing $100-200 million turnover from that market pretty easily. And I think we have all the infrastructure, all the capability, all the capacity. It's about getting the relationships and getting the business model for these markets right. So I think your point of geographical diversification and getting more from emerging markets, have brands in a lot of emerging markets to sell from, and creating cash flows from those to invest for future growth, I think is the way out.
What about diversifying within, say, consumer healthcare, or maybe towards the over-the-counter kind of growth? The reason I say this is that we've seen two deals which have taken place this year itself. Cadila with, you know, the Zydus, with them helping Zydus in terms of acquiring Heinz's portfolio, as well as Strides seeing some amount of, investment in their FMCG or rather consumer health portfolio in India. In that sense, do you think that that business would have potential? Piramal, for example, also has a great OTC portfolio.
Yeah. See, the OTC portfolio is definitely a reasonable diversification to make, but can these guys work more and become broad-based food businesses? No, because some of the examples you mentioned relate to even certain categories of food-based businesses which require distribution, which is completely different from what pharma companies can deliver. But spaces which are wellness, spaces which are health, spaces which are having the advantage of using the same distribution, there is a very big opportunity. OTC, in my judgment, is the smallest space today in India when you compare to any market in the world. The largest brand in OTC or these kind of OTC categories will still be very, very small in India and can have very good economics, high profitability. The only problem for companies starting today in that area is that initial scale of investment. In the first 2-3 years to build those brands, you need to spend more than what would be the revenues you would earn for those products. So I think the challenge is which battle to choose. You know, somebody has chosen a specialty battle today, he's giving up on the OTC battle. So it's like which battle to choose to really get to where, you know, what kind of shareholder returns is a big challenge for Indian companies. But yes, OTC is definitely an important opportunity. Some categories of prescription products which Indian companies can move to OTC, which is allowed and which can be moved to OTC, can actually be very good starting point from these businesses to take them to a different kind of a growth rate. And I think that is a good opportunity. And like you said, these are like semi-consumer businesses in that sense.
Hmm. You know, Shailesh, we can't have a conversation about pharmaceuticals without discussing the US FDA. And I've always wondered that if in case, you know, a fund manager is holding a stock for a long period of time, but all of a sudden there's a disruptive kind of news, such as say a 483, an import alert, and there's a derating in terms of the fundamentals of that particular stock because of that piece of news. What do you do at that point in time? Do you stay put in that investment, or do you probably decide that maybe you should probably exit and look elsewhere?
See, we have seen these kind of events happening over the last several years, and they've happened with, unfortunately, with greater regularity or great regularity. But I think the core issues which existed then was there was a difference between the compliance expectation of a US FDA and what was being delivered by Indian suppliers. And I think to a large extent that has been narrowed. As an investor in, you know, any of these businesses which will have these challenges, you just have to understand that 483 is normal course of business. It is a process requirement which can be altered, which can be corrected, and 483s are as common as anything else. It's just the degree of 483s and how the management responds to it. So it builds on the management capability to handle it. And the second thing is it should not relate to any data integrity problem. The normal process improvement suggestions by the regulator are always welcome, because I think they only make it stronger and, you know, much better for the next level of growth. The challenge arises only in the case that this translates into import alert where you are not able to sell and you have huge cost built in. And normally it takes a lot of time to get over these issues. You know, in a lot of cases it's taken 2 years and 3 years. And that kind of investment, which is maybe in a plant of 1,000 crore or 2,000 crores, may not be yielding any returns for that period of time. And plus the whole company gets impacted because your R&D has to be rescaled and a lot of such things have to be done. So it purely depends on how an investor reacts, depends on the degree of challenge. On a normal case basis, getting a 483 and companies handling it is business as usual in a lot of cases.
So for example, if a company has a structural problem in terms of the FDA, or maybe one or maybe more than two plants are impacted by the US FDA regulatory issues, that's when you'd probably be more concerned as opposed to say one specific plant?
Yes. So rightly said, because you know there is a method which a lot of these companies follow of, you know, de-risking or creating alternate sites for a lot of products. In fact, this was not the case with a lot of Indian companies, never thought about this as a challenge, and hence critical products were filed from one facility. And that, you know, when that facility went into a challenge, you had a large part of your revenues or potential revenues at risk. Now, a lot of Indian businesses have seen this as a challenge. They are diversifying sites. They are trying to create different alternative sites and also alongside enhance the compliance required to achieve that. a lot of big issues in India which have happened for data integrity can also be corrected by getting electronic controls in terms of how data is captured and supplied to FDA without manual intervention. And I think that is also one step where we have seen millions of dollars of investment done by a lot of Indian companies.
So in your interaction with companies, what kind of changes are they making in order to probably improve operations? And do you think that there has to be some sort of top-down change which needs to take place in order for the culture to probably see a reassessment on for the better of it?
Yeah. I would go to the root cause of the problem. There were two cases, two issues, which in my judgment were critical issues. One is there was definitely a little bit of a cultural challenge that the way work was being done was different from what the regulators were expecting or the compliance was required. The second bigger challenge was they had seen abnormal growth. You know, organization is designed for 15% growth, 20% growth. But, you know, there were periods where, you know, the growth rates actually shot up at 25-30% for 4-5 years. So you do have mistakes when huge growth comes and your priorities shift rather than priorities on pure quality or compliance, you know, it shifts to other areas. I think the first problem, which relates to improvement of compliance, improvement of culture to drive it, I think a lot of companies have worked significantly. Second is, one's relying on the culture as well, but second also the systems themselves, which cannot be doctored, because that allows for far better, I would say, control over data integrity issues. There's no human intervention to correct that, so that, you know, you are identifying them very early in the system. Plus, a lot of people have recruited senior people from with these kind of capabilities who are actually auditing them parallelly as internal employees itself. So it's like there is huge rigor in terms of getting processes right way before an external body tries to let you know or come up with a challenge. So I think many steps have been taken. One big investment companies made is in excess of millions of dollars in saying just we'll capture data from the machines directly to our systems without having an ability or an intermediate to change the data or, you know, enter the data in a particular fashion. So that itself costs a little bit of money, but it's very, very effective in terms of proving that, you know, you have complied to all. Yes, there are quality issues or there can be quality issues, but a process is there to be improved to take care of that. So issues which were data integrity related have been contained by culture, automatic data capture investments, and continuous internal checks. And I think this industry has gone through, in my judgment, one step change in terms of the level of maturity, especially in the top leading businesses in this industry.
Okay. So, Shailesh, if you had to make a choice in terms of, say, picking a stock or an idea of a pharmaceutical company, because it's always stock specific, every story is different for every particular company and there's not really one general theme, what would you probably advise in terms of what somebody should look at when they're picking a pharmaceutical stock?
It's the focus should on any business, or more specifically the pharma businesses, what is the sustainable piece of revenues and profits for those businesses? That becomes the core, right? Because there are a lot of businesses which have the India component, which has very good sustainability, or the emerging market branded component, which has very good sustainability. And I think what percentage of profits are coming from there, I think, is a critical element when we look at valuing businesses in the space. The second is, what is the kind of investments they have made in their R&D, or what is their product pipeline likely to be in the next 1 to 3 years? See, this is critical because that will differentiate. You know, a successful product or a successful portfolio of the product can yield multiple returns versus a product portfolio or a product category which is not so well yielding. So I think how much of investment these guys are making, and third is how they are conducting these investments from a cost point of view. Are they writing it off in the P&L? Are they carrying to balance sheet? You know, it matters a lot, because real earnings will appear very depressed if they are writing it off to the P&L, which is also not the complete truth. And real earnings also appear, if you're not writing off in the P&L, they actually appear very bloated and can give a misguiding picture to investors. So our focus is to really assess by taking some judgment there, where, you know, how much of real investments in R&D need to be written off and how do you value a company based on that. So today you're valuing a lot of businesses in India after they are spending 1,000, 1,500 crore, 2,000 crore on R&D, and then on reported profits you're giving an earnings multiple, right? And I think that is the best case, because that's also a conservative way of doing it. So I think first is sustainability of earnings and the kind and quality of R&D investments they have made. So both of these will really matter a lot.
Okay. And Shailesh, before we wrap this up, do you think that the pharma stocks are going to start outperforming a little more now in 2019?
We have seen one leg of recovery last year, you know, or this year. We have seen a material leg of recovery in the space. I think the earnings driven outperformance or performance of the sector is possible when, you know, you have an earnings recovery outlook which is there. So I think earnings will lead to the change. So if the sector surprises us on earnings, which are possibly higher than Nifty earnings for the next 1 to 3 years, you definitely have that optionality. And it's critical that that earnings have to recover on a sustained basis after these investments in R&D, you know, which will lead to this kind of, or which will lead to this sector doing well. Interestingly, like you said, markets have many phases. There are other segments of the market which can still offer opportunities, but the longevity of these businesses is pretty good, which makes these businesses attractive for investors from a 1 to 3 year point of view.
Okay. All right, Shailesh. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. But thank you very much for joining in on this conversation on the Medicine Box and really giving us in-depth understanding in terms of a lot of details within the pharmaceutical space. We have a lot more to discuss, so I'm sure we're going to get you back on the Medicine Box at a future date and take this conversation forward as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.